folks look around, please. Thank you very much. Greatly appreciate it. So we have standing room only at this lovely meeting. And at this particular moment, I am very pleased to introduce to you a wonderful man by the name of Randall.
Hi there. My name is Randy. And I'm a very grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. And thank God for me being here tonight. I wanted to wish happy birthday to all the birthday people tonight. And thank Jim for inviting me. It is an honor for this group in particular, but just to be able to share my story. And I'll get into that a little bit more later. I just wanted to say I'm a believer in the spiritual healing of the 12 steps and all of the other program principles. And I'm a believer that, you know, if you want to feel better, you go to a meeting. But if you want to be better and act better, you work the steps. And so 50 years ago, I was 11. And I was in sixth grade. And I had a teacher, I went to a small town, had a teacher who was kind of a, been there a while, and he was kind of an eclectic sort of a guy, and they had built a program around him. The fifth and sixth graders did ceramic projects, and he was a potter, and he did other creative projects, and they actually let him do that program in elementary school. They had a kiln built in, and he did things like, when we came in from recess, he would read The Hobbit. And, you know, it just sparked my imagination and made me really want to read. And, you know, for a few of us kids, he also recognized that we didn't have as much parental influence as we should have. And there were a few of us that he mentored after school. He would put in an extra hour or two, and we would do projects. And for me, it was creating an airplane from balsa wood. And there was no plan, strictly his mentoring. And he gave me direction, and I laminated flat sheets of balsa wood and created a wing. And I created a fuselage out of three other tapered pieces of flat balsa wood. And I created a rudder and a stabilizer. And he helped me mount an engine on it. And he helped me mount two landing gear. And then, you know, one weekend he took me out and we flew it. And it actually flew at 11. And the reason I say that story is because I was successful at responding to mentoring and to guidance and to unconditional kindness and love. And I didn't see much of that in my family of origin. There was love there. And I wanted to preface the rest of this by saying, first of all, that thank God for Al-Anon, because it teaches us, you know, to understand if we have resentments, to understand how a person maybe got to the place he was and how they got to behave the way they are. And that is the source of forgiveness. And that's a gift that's been given to me. And my parents did the best they could, but it wasn't enough. And, you know, I take at least 50% of the responsibility for who I was. You know, I think we're born with personalities. And I was that kind of a kid who was very rebellious and didn't take direction well. But, you know, I believe that it was also part of my environment. And my father was the kind of guy that, well, let me back up a second. You know, the reason I told that story also is because, and there's a big impetus there, and the reason I tell it is that this meeting in particular, when I got here shortly after I started program, is full of those mentors, right? This is what we do. We mentor each other through this program. And we walk each other through the steps and we relate our experience to each other. We say, this is how it worked for me. Or perhaps, you know, you might want to try it this way. And that's the essence of this program, right? Because we don't do it alone. And so, you know, getting back to my family of origin, you know, it was, it wasn't that place where I had mentoring. And there wasn't a lot of guidance. It was a fearful place. My father was a fairly large person, and he had rage, and he exhibited rage often. And, you know, he was a little violent, just enough to give me that long-term fear. I was afraid of him into my 30s. And it was a critical place. Give you an example, you know, the year that I was born, my parents started a business. And I didn't get enough criticism at home, so I had to be part of that business for 20 years, you know. And you know, I chased after that love, you know, continually hoping that he would come through and be that father I needed him to be. But that place of business was a place that he exhibited a lot of that rage. He would rage at employees and inappropriately in front of customers. And there was this turnstile of employees. You know, one year we had a 300% turnover of employees because he would, you know, embarrass them and they would come in, get hired, and then right out the door, you know. And I was around that. And, you know, after a while, your threshold of embarrassment and appropriateness is kind of erased. And there was a lot of judgment of others. There was, it was a chaotic place, you know. The gifts that we were given, we were actually pretty spoiled, but they were used as ways of control, you know, guilt. And there wasn't really a lot of physical affection. There wasn't any affirmations. There was no quality time spent because they were busy with the business. And so, in addition to that, there was no spiritual belief. You know, we were told early that we were Jewish, but we never went to synagogue. And they never really modeled any belief system. And so I grew up feeling different because I grew up in a primarily Christian environment. But there was no spiritual base to build on. I learned to be self-reliant because, you know, the message was, you should know, but we're not going to teach you. And so I had to try and figure it out, you know. And, you know, what I did learn that was positive, I think, was that my parents modeled stick together, you know, be a team. Each of them, you know, where one was weak, the other was strong. There was trust between them. And, you know, even though my father had problems with spending, some other issues, my mom was the one who fixed it. And so all of those things kind of culminated into a perfect storm for me. You know, I was that guy who learned really to be my mother. And I thought I was looking for her to get love, you know, but later on, it wouldn't be her, it would be my father, in essence, who I was looking for in relationships. I didn't have a lot of self-esteem, you know. My father's favorite saying would be, you know, if I was tagging along with him on a delivery, you know, the customer would say, "Oh, you brought your son along and your little helper or something," and he would say, "Yeah, he's a good boy when he's sleeping." And you know, my mom would say things like, you know, about 7 or 8 years ago, I finally reached what I thought was my threshold, my goal in life, you know, my earnings goal. And when I told her, she said, "Oh, that's not that much anymore." So I came away with some low self-esteem, you know, and I didn't realize it too, that, you know, that environment that I exposed myself to for so long, that chaos, left me with a sense of needing to control, you know, making up for that lack of control. We were also minimized as a kid, you know, especially as the youngest of three. I wasn't heard very much. And so, you know, it's that not being valued, you know. And so to make up for that, right, I need to be heard, right? And I came away with a kind of an idealized, naive, immature sort of concept of what my parents' relationship was about. But I did see one thing, and that is the place for that love, the love that I was seeking, seemed to be between the two of them. That they had love between the two of them, and that they were able to, seemed like they had that magic, right, that I was looking for, that I hadn't gotten. They had the affection. They had the quality time together. They had those affirmations, that relationship. And so the picture I have in my head, you know, is this long-term marriage, naive picture, but with a woman, obviously, is the only place I'm going to find love. And so I went on a quest. And I, literally after, you know, I reached puberty, man, it was on, right? And the first lady that I found was literally, I just got a car from my parents, and they use that over and over again. And I was able to go and date. And so I found this lady, young lady, and we made a pact. As soon as we were old enough to get married, we were going to get married. And we did. 18. And about that time, I had gotten ill. I actually contracted Crohn's disease, and still have it today. It's an acute disease. But I had lost about 20% of my body weight by the time they really diagnosed it, and a lot of body mass, and she left. And with her left that picture, you know, that dream of one woman, lifetime, right? But I didn't give up. After I recuperated, Went to the gym, got back in shape, found another victim. I mean, woman. And this one was perfect, and she was cute. She had just lost her husband. She was only 21. She had just lost her husband, committed suicide in the house while she was in the house with him. Perfect. My codependency kicked in. Right? Right? There you go. And off we went. And before you know it, she was pregnant. And don't know how that happened. But she was pregnant. We had one child, and about 20 months later had another one. Two beautiful girls. It's the best thing I've ever done. And because of them, I have 6 grandkids today. I forgot to mention that both these young ladies, their fathers were alcoholics. I don't know how that happened. But I do know that I was attracted to them because they had something. They sparkled. You know, they had that effervescence. I don't know how to explain it. And I was attracted to that because I'm kind of a stick in the mud, you know. And I wasn't socialized as a kid. I didn't have that, you know. And so I gravitated towards that. And, you know, the problem is I was not equipped to have relationships. You know, I didn't have a support system or mentors. I didn't have a higher power. I didn't have the socialization skills. And that marriage eventually also deteriorated. She became a coke addict, and it became an asexual relationship. I started taking separate vacations. You know how that goes, right? On and on, right? And ultimately, I had an affair. And to make things better, you know, I left with the woman I was having the affair with and moved in with her. And that's the kind of guy I was. And that isn't bad enough, you know, leaving your children who were 13 and 14 with a coke addict is probably not a good idea. And it's not a safe place for them. But I wasn't worried about that. And so those are the kind of choices that I made. And so I moved into this woman with this woman. I filed for divorce. And 3 years later, I married the affair. Now, she had confessed to me that she had used heroin, but said she'd beat it. She was 7 years clean. But I wasn't equipped with the facts about alcoholism and addiction. And she was a drinker. And she was a pot smoker. And I thought, just having fun. Didn't bother me a bit. But ultimately, you know, after some years of fun, you know, that, as we know, the disease is progressive, right? And she soon graduated back into pills and then ultimately into heroin again. And that's who got me here. I went to a therapist and they suggested Al-Anon. And when I got here, I don't know if any newcomers are here that can identify, but the pain was seeping from my eyes. I wasn't really crying. It was just up to here and it was just oozing out. And I found a meeting close to my house that had 2 gray-haired ladies in it. And they took turns being secretary. I know now that may not be a healthy meeting, but it was just what God directed me to do, and it was just what I needed. And I got a sponsor, and then I got a second one here in this meeting. Well, actually, it was in the other room that they tore down. And it's Carl H. And, you know, we started working the steps together. And, you know, as soon as I wrote that narrative in the fourth step, you know, he recognized immediately the patterns. And then I was on the journey, right, to discover what it was that really made me do the things I do, to understand and to change my behaviors, to change who I was. You know, I didn't want to be that guy anymore that had the affair. And so it was, and I just want to relate one little story here, because it was early on that I was over at the Foothill Roundup and heard Cliff R. And he's spoken in our meeting here several times. But this particular time was an extra long pitch that he had, and he related a story about his 8 minutes. And see, it seems that, you know, he was a school teacher and a debate coach, and he worked long hours. And about 9 o'clock at night, he'd run out to his car, and out in his glove box, he had a pint of vodka that was hot from sitting in the car all day. And he would crack that seal on that, and he would sit in his car and drink. And about a half hour into his drinking, he had what he called an 8 minute serenity period. And he said, if you'd asked him what serenity was back then, he would have said, 8 minutes, half hour into my drinking. And he felt that was the only 8 minutes he'd ever know, the only serenity he would ever know. And in that auditorium, I wept. I wept because for the first time, I understood what it must have felt like being an alcoholic. And I had compassion. And it was the first time I'd ever had compassion for any of the alcoholics or addicts in my life. I've been of service to this meeting and to other meetings. You know, I've taken various commitments in my time in Al-Anon. And I'll have 10 years in January. And during that time, I've taken all the regular commitments, but I've also taken commitments outside. You know, I've helped people move. I've taken institutions commitments. I'm currently the treasurer of Intergroup. And in return, you know, I've gotten so many gifts from this program. People who are willing to go to any length to give their love. And, you know, along with the meetings and the fellowship afterwards, I've had people show up to court with me. He's not here tonight, he and his wife gave me a place to live for 2.5 months when I couldn't afford any place to live. About a year or so into program, a group of us started cycling together. When I got here, I was 35 pounds heavier than I am today. And one of the brothers from this program in this room, he and I went to dance lessons together. They've helped me move twice. They've helped me paint, remodel. They've done book studies with me. And the list goes on and on. You know, the gifts that we get, right? We pay them forward. We just do what they say, you know. We make relationships in this fellowship. Also about a year into program, you know, I really started, I attended a church that my neighbor had attended. And, you know, ultimately I became a member of that church and I got baptized. And my two daughters saw me get baptized there. And my faith continued to grow. And in this meeting, I heard over and over again, you know, if you want to be a better man, do esteemable acts. You know, if you can act your way into right thinking, you know, you do it often enough and you become that person. And I wanted to be that father, son, brother, an employee that was worthy of esteem. And so I decided to. And I started calling my mother and my daughters weekly. And, you know, I started, sometimes it was very awkward, and I didn't have anything to say, but I did it anyway. And, you know, over the years, that relationship with my two daughters and my mother grew. And I'd like to share, too, the concept that I learned here about loving yourself. Someone told me that, you know, if you want to love yourself, you know, do you know your grandson, how it feels to put him in a car seat to buckle him in? And I said, yeah. Okay, do that for yourself, you know. The only reason I was buckling the seatbelt when I got in the car so I wouldn't get a ticket. And so that concept was difficult for me to really grasp. But eventually, okay, I love you, Randy, right? I love you. And I started making choices. Every choice I made, every meal I chose, every behavior I chose was a loving act that I gave to myself. So I was on a regular call to my daughter about 3 weeks ago. And she says, Dad, I need to tell you something. I said, what? She says, I joined a recovery group at church. I said, you did? You don't have a problem. She says, Dad, I did it because I don't want to be that angry woman anymore. And it's affecting my children. And she started asking me questions about our meetings and how it works, you know, and we started picking up a language, a common language. And the next week I called her, she asked more questions. She says, yeah, I went to another meeting, Dad. I said, I'm very proud of you, very proud of you. She says, but I have a question. Why did you leave us with Mom? And I told her the truth. It's because I didn't have the courage to do what I needed to do, and I was self-centered and selfish. And she said, I forgive you for that, Dad. And somehow or other, she was aware when she joined that recovery group at church that people do change when they're in recovery. And she didn't want to be that angry woman. And you know, I lost my mother in May of this year. And she had been in decline for some time. She She had a couple of long hospital stays in January, a year and a half ago. And we thought we'd lose her then, but she came back. But then she was still in a constant state of decline. And ultimately, I started sensing that, I needed to visit her more often and so on. So I did. And it got down to the last couple of days, and I took off work. And every time I saw her, every time I said hello to her, regardless of her short-term memory loss, she remembered me. She never forgot. And so I'm there, stroking her arm. And the hospice nurse is there. And he says, by her posture, she's clenching her fist. She's resisting passing. Why don't you give her permission? I said, okay. So I'm stroking her arm, and I lean over, whispered in her ear, "I love you, Mama. We're going to be okay. Don't you worry about a thing." I said, "God and I have an understanding. I want you to take his hand and go with him. We're going to be okay. I love you, Mama." And about 45 minutes later, her fists were unclenched and she was able to pass. If it hadn't been for Al-Anon, I know I couldn't have done that. Because I didn't want to lie to my mother. I wanted to be truthful to her. And it's because of my belief in a higher power today that I was able to tell her the truth. And we have a group of people that exchange gratitude lists. And I brought with me page upon page upon page of distinct gratitudes that I've written over this last year. And I got that from this program, because there isn't anything that goes on in this world that you can't be grateful for. And I've learned that. And I wanted to say something about this group in particular. When I got here, they were the core of my journey. The men in this room provided a place for me, as I mentioned earlier about mentoring, to find the love that I needed. And I was going through a divorce from the last lady that I was with, and it was a very contentious time. And during that time, I got nothing but love and support from this group. And I'm very grateful. Very grateful. I just wanted to end it with something to acknowledge. Before program, I was an angry, selfish, dishonest cheater. I was unhealthy. I was reactive and immature. I was full of resentment, alone, no friends, judgmental, sad, bitter, full of self-pity and fear-based, And today, those things have been removed. And I owe it all to you guys in this program. My hope for you is that you will experience the same spiritual healing that I have. God bless.